The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Welcome to the Soul Mason Show!
Wherever and whenever you are listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to one and all. You can listen to the Phil Mason Show each and every day at 5 p.m. Eastern on Max Sports Channels, at 10 p.m. Eastern on the Superstation of Talk, TalkSuperstation.com, and at various times throughout the day on Armed Forces Radio and Cosmic Radio. I'd like to welcome you to the Phil Mason Show. Man, do I have a great show planned for you today. Coming up later on, Alex Hall from AthleticsNation.com will be here. We're going to talk a little Oakland A's baseball, as well as take a look at the American League West. And Eric Pleiss will be here from KnuckleballsBlog.com to basically just chat a little baseball with me. But up first, from TheDreamShake.com, please welcome lead writer, Mr. Brandon Davis, to the show. Brandon, how you doing, man? Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here. I'm doing great tonight. A little flattered by lead writer. Kind of appreciate that. It's nice to hear. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I am doing great. I just got my new computer last night. The guy brought it to me on the tennis court. But Windows 8 is a disaster when you're 48. But it's all good. I'll have it all sorted out for next week, and we'll be sounding even better, I hope. But last week, the show that you and I did, the segment, 16 minutes produced 85 comments on your site. I was amazed, man. You've got a great community over there at thedreamshake.com, don't you?
I'm occasionally proud of them. Sometimes they make me regret it, but overall, I'm okay with them.
Hey, I'll tell you what, they just amazed me because, you know, usually when people listen to radio shows, or in this case, they're listening to the podcast version, which is actually the same thing, they don't comment because they're not in front of a computer when they listen. So I was completely amazed. And I've been amazed over the last couple of months how many people are interested in what is said on the show. And one of the things that was said on the show, I talked about Jeremy Lin. Now, my apologies. I need to clear something up real quick, Brandon. When I said I thought, I thought that Beverly took his job. I thought he outplayed him during that period where he was playing and Jeremy Lin was out. And I had no way of, or in no way was I insinuating that he took his job. I felt that personally. I didn't clear that up. I didn't say it with much clarity. And I do apologize, you folks at the Dream Shake. And I'm glad that you called me out on it. And then some people said, well, I don't think he said that exactly. But either way, now you know. But one of the things, Brandon, about Jeremy Lin, and I'm a Knicks fan, and I'm a Celtics fan, too. It's a weird thing. I'll tell you about it sometime offline. But Jeremy Lin is a polarizing figure for whatever reason, isn't he?
Yeah, I have occasionally come to refer to him as the Tim Tebow of basketball.
That's what I refer to him as. That's exactly how I refer to him as. But I don't call him Sexy Jesus like I call Tim Tebow.
I don't know if I could ever get behind that idea.
Well, did you see the GQ spread that he did last year, Tim Tebow?
Yeah, that was a Jets training camp in Cortland, if I recall. Yep. That was the shirtless photo. But yeah, I used to go to school not too far from Cortland, so I kind of facepalmed a little bit and got depressed.
Okay. Well, anyway, he posed in this certain way, and I started calling him Sexy Jesus. Actually, Craig Carton from WFAN was the first one to do it. And I liked the bit so much, I decided to incorporate it in my show with his permission, of course. But what makes Jeremy Lin so polarizing, though? What is it about him that either people like him or hate him? Because there's nowhere, there really isn't a middle, is there?
There is, but you kind of have to find some fans who are, I guess, divorced from the situation. Either, you know, they never sold themselves on the underdog story, or they were never huge detractors. One of those, the wheels have to come off eventually. But I figured you might appreciate this. I did a little bit of background research and started to put together my own idea as to what makes him such a polarizing figure. And what I slowly started to see was, for Jeremy Lin, he had his breakout story in New York City. He managed to impact Madison Square Garden's stock at the end of the run of Lin's sanity, to a point of a 1.2% bump on it, which is really huge for Madison Square Garden stock, usually considered slow moving as a multimedia thing. But then we start to muddy the picture a little bit. He had all this exposure, and he became that magnet for an Asian audience that's huge in the NBA that don't have access to a figure they can relate to since Yao Ming retired. Linsanity gave that back. It became an icon because for most people who watch basketball, there is somebody they can attach themselves to that's prominent except for the Asian market outside of when Yao Ming was here. What wound up happening after that was you get to build this media darling story. In New York, you have an underdog. But, I mean, an underdog insofar as an athletically gifted Ivy League graduate could be considered. And then he leaves the city. That polarized major markets. Same way we're seeing the backlash from Dwight Howard leaving LA. And I really think, if not for having a coming out story in a major market and then ditching it while attracting such a huge audience that was kind of disenfranchised from the NBA, I think that's what caused the polarization right there.
That's a good observation. It really is. You know, one of the things that I felt, and I enjoyed Linsanity, and why I did is because when they did the lockout, I decided I wasn't going to watch basketball that year, just like I did with hockey this year. I didn't watch a single game. But this Linsanity started, and a friend of mine, Greg Eno, who's a sports writer in Detroit, he was coming on the show, and I said, hey, you want to talk about this? So I had to watch a game, and, you know, he brought a lot of excitement, especially to the Knicks, who were banged up pretty good. Carmelo Anthony was out. Amari Stoudemire was kind of in there and out there. It was an awful situation. He made it interesting, and he brought a lot of people back because a lot of people were ticked off about this lockout or the lockout that happened last year, and he did do that. But one thing that I couldn't figure out is what all the fuss was about for a guy who, well, I'll tell you what, he averaged 6 assists a game for the Knicks, and he would have averaged 9 assists a game had Spike Lee been able to shoot. Because he threw the ball to Spike Lee a lot. I mean, that's the thing that I couldn't figure out is why this kid who can't go to his left and he turns the ball over crazy is so polarizing, is so popular, it has taken the NBA by storm, and I guess, well, for all the reasons you described.
Well, if I can jump in on that, the idea of the turnovers, that was something that came up all the time when the Rockets were acquiring him, and a lot of Rockets fans talked about it. And the way I justified it was, people like Steve Nash and Chris Paul, what people ignore about these guys is their assist to turnover ratios at times will be appalling. They will rack up turnovers because what they're doing is they're taking that gamble pass. They have to do it. And, you know, it's one of those things. When it works, you praise them for being wildly skilled. When it doesn't, you want to rip your hair out, or in my case, what hair you've got left, about the mistake. So, you know, I'm willing to give a pass to these kind of guys on those.
Yeah, I tell you what I noticed, too, because I did a little research today, too, is his turnovers are down from his year with the Knicks or his part year with the Knicks. His points are down a little bit, but that's because he actually had a scorer on the floor with him. And because Carmelo Anthony wasn't around for most of Linsanity. And his steals were up. He played pretty well for Houston. See, I didn't watch enough Houston to even comment. I probably should have shut up. But this is going to be interesting this year, what he does. I think this will be the year that tells us all who he really is. I think that will, this season will define him. What are the chances that he's going to remain with Houston? There are a lot of people out there saying that he's on the trading block. Have you heard anything about that?
I've heard it tossed around as a likely scenario. I don't buy it. First and foremost, Dwight Howard and James Harden says they want Jeremy there. And Daryl Morey praises him as, I think, like the 5th best pick and roll ball player in the NBA, per the stats that they keep. And most people, let alone myself, we can't even begin to fathom how intricate those get. But I think he sticks with Houston. I think he can be the starting point guard on a championship team. Considering Jameer Nelson got all the way to a finals, I figure Jeremy's at least comparable, if not better, works better off the pick and roll, decent floor general, and he has both Harden and Howard behind him. So I don't see him getting moved realistically.
Okay, that's fair enough. And you know, the other thing that people were talking about is how big a contract he got, how it was backloaded. And no one in the history of the NBA received a contract like that, that much money for on a 35-game budget. So that's probably partially to do with it. Another thing that came up on our segment last week was the Doc Rivers-Kevin McHale comparison. Now, there were some who thought that you were saying that Kevin McHale was a better coach than Doc Rivers, and I don't think you said that. What you said was he's in the conversation, correct?
Yeah. Unfortunately, with some of the stuff I write and or say, there's always going to be a small segment of the population looking to make a bigger deal out of it than what I said was. So, I said he joins the conversation if he wins a title.
That's fair enough. Now, yeah, on yesterday's show, I made a statement that I didn't think that Doc Rivers would have the success that people think he will in Los Angeles. And I made that statement honestly. I've watched Doc Rivers coach for a long time. And when you look at his record, in 99 or 2000, he was the coach of the year. They finished 500 with Orlando, which was pretty much a miracle, if you ask me, considering you look at the team he had. But then he didn't do so. You know, he did a little better each year. And then he got off to that 1-10 start in 2004, and that was it. Then he went to Boston, and he had some real lean years. In fact, in 2007, it was 24-58 he was, with a team that wasn't that good. And then he got Kevin Garnett, and they won a championship. And my statement was, is with Doc Rivers, is that without he needed Kevin Garnett to win, and the Los Angeles Clippers don't have a Kevin Garnett. What do you think about that?
I'm actually going to jump right behind you on all of that. I think Rivers for what he is, I've leveled the criticism, a similar one before, at guys like Phil Jackson even, that they don't get praised until they get a completed team, or at least some guys on their roster who, you know, either themselves or in concert with a couple of guys are all NBA beaters. And what we have with Doc Rivers, people praise him now, but from 1999 to 2006, his best record was 45-37. His record never with Orlando never exceeded a 54% win percentage. His best finish in that time was third in the Atlantic. And then in his time with Boston, he coached them to first in the Atlantic, down to fifth in a really weak division. But then, like you said, he got Pierce, Allen, and Garnett. He doesn't have that in Los Angeles. He's going to have to work with Chris Paul, and there's only so much that lobbing passes and slam dunks will get you off of him and Blake Griffin. So I don't see it without the second guy there, because he couldn't do it with just Paul Pierce on that squad in Boston.
And they think that J.J. Redick is the answer, and I'm going to tell you that he's not. Even though Doc Rivers is high on him, because last year Boston tried to acquire J.J. Redick because Doc Rivers thought so much of him. But Doc Rivers needs those veterans on the floor who can get it done, like Ray Allen did, and like Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. And the Los Angeles Clippers, in my opinion, don't have that combination. They may someday. But when you go back to this coaching thing, you know, there are different degrees of coaching, Brandon. This is my theory anyway. You've got guys like Vinny Del Negro, Doug Collins, Stan Van Gundy, who are really good coaches and really build teams. They can take a crappy team and build it. They're very clever, they know what they're doing, and they take care of their business. Look at everywhere that Doug Collins has been after they won a championship. He did it in Chicago, he did it in Detroit, and if it wouldn't have been for Andrew Bynum going bowling, he probably would have done it in Philly as well. Doc Rivers isn't in that conversation. If he were, he would still be coaching the Boston Celtics. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And I'm not being disparaging again to Doc Rivers. He's a fantastic coach. But there are guys who can coach, champions, and there are guys who can build and teach. And I don't think he's the best teacher out there. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think he rides it out. But, you know, there's a difference between riding it out and coaching them up, right? Boston had their chance when they still had Al Jefferson as the highlight of their squad, that trade package that got sent out to Minnesota for Kevin Garnett. So, I mean, I would agree with you for the most part there, because you know, at that point, I put Phil Jackson in that same thing. They don't build teams. They kind of come to them and then, you know, just kind of work with building what you got.
Yep, exactly. Now we've got about 45 seconds left. Kevin McHale, he's got such a small sample size that we really can't determine what he's going to do and what conversation we put him in yet. But one thing is clear. The two seasons that he's been with Houston have both been productive and better. And I would say that he has a lot less talent than a lot of teams. And much better.
I want to give you, with McHale, 4 years coached, he posted a 62% win percentage in one of his years with Minnesota. Mm-hmm. In 2 years with Houston, he already hit his 45-win streak, and he's got done it against better competition than Doc Rivers ever had to deal with in Minnesota, or in Boston.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. It should be interesting, and you know what? Next week, we'll talk more about all this stuff and probably get into some different things. Brandon, great stuff tonight. Thank you for being on the show with me.
Glad to be here. Sorry if I caught myself rambling a little bit.
Nah, you're all good, man. You're all good. Anyway, that was Brandon Davis, and you can find him over at thedreamshake.com. Coming up next, Eric Pleiss from knuckleballsblog.com will be here to talk a little baseball with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Cosmic Music, 24/7 on cosmicradio.com. CosmicRadio.com.
Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at AridiHotel.com or email them at reservations@ArediHotel.com.
TalkSuperStation.com.
That's right, the superstation of talk.
Talking to you each and every day.
We have a lot to talk about.
Monday.
Government is not the answer. Health is the answer.
Hey guys, I'm here.
Tuesday.
The Yankees are always good.
We are going to go for old timers now.
Well, I think I feel. I'm a Mets fan. We have clothespin.
Wednesday.
You and I are staying put.
Thank goodness, because I have no socks on, and staying put is what I need to do.
Thursday.
I would love
Martin
to get
Sheen actually decided to run for president. I would vote for him.
Friday.
You know how hard it is to get a topic not about sports on ESPN Radio? It's about as hard as me introducing sports on this show.
Saturday.
It's time to party.
And Sunday.
How can we respect anyone in Washington, D.C.?
Every day, we talk to you.
Sit back and enjoy this.
Talk Superstation.
I'm on the air.
.com. Talk. Spoken here.
Are you tired of boring sports websites that's about the same old company line? If you are, then I'd invite you to stop over to thesportsgoons.com. Their edgy commentary and a weekly podcast highlighting today's issues is second to none. That's thesportsgoons.com. The new media has arrived. Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show. This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnasons.com. Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The Sports Talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination. Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. That was a lot of fun talking basketball with Brandon Davis. And up now, we're going to do something a little different. Eric Pleiss is on the line from knuckleballsblog.com. And normally we do a full segment of Twins baseball, but tonight we're going to kind of branch out and just talk a little general baseball. Welcome to the show, Eric. How you doing, man?
Hey, Phil. I'm doing all right. You know, the Twins are in the stink of it right now. They're just really struggling. They're making all kinds of roster moves. I think they're going to be lucky to avoid 100 losses this year. But the trade deadline just passed. Lots of exciting things news-wise to watch for, and there's a lot of exciting races around baseball. So while the Twins aren't really holding my attention, there's still plenty to look forward to.
Absolutely. You know, I thought Justin Marneau would have been moved. I really believe so, but his contract might be a little too big, right?
Well, I think his contract is a little bit too big. It sounded like kind of that in the aftermath of things today, we are hearing that the Twins weren't really looking to eat a lot of that salary. They wanted another team to pick it up and to get a player back. So, I mean, there's not a lot of interest for that. You know, he's hitting around like $175 in July, so it's not like he was making himself really look nice to other teams around the deadline.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I'll tell you who did make a big move, and that was Boston. And this three-way trade turned out to be pretty good. This Boston trade with Chicago and Detroit, because the hammer's coming down. Johnny Peralta's getting suspended for the rest of the season. Boston needed a starting pitcher. They got Jake Peavy. Detroit needed a shortstop, and they picked up Iglesias. And the Cubs needed a power-hitting outfielder, and they got one in Abisail Garcia. That was a great trade all the way around, wasn't it?
Yeah, so the White Sox, not the Cubs.
White Sox.
Yeah. But, I mean, it seems like a really nice thing. It's interesting that two American League Central teams got involved there, especially with how you know, they're going to have to play each other a lot, and it seems like Chicago has at least some type of idea that they want to contend in the next couple of years, and Kenny Williams just does whatever he can at the deadline there. So maybe interesting to go in the division there. But for the Red Sox, this works out great. You know, Iglesias is really an expendable player as a defense for a shortstop. They got some prospects coming up, so he is a guy that they could have easily moved. PV will slot right in for them and give them an extra arm down the stretch. I mean, they have to hope that he stays healthy, but that shouldn't be too much of an issue. I mean, in a short term, you have more likely that he'll stay healthy down the stretch and give them another excellent arm in the bullpen. You know, and for the Tigers, like you said, if Peralta ends up getting suspended for any extended length of time, Iglesias is a guy that can step into that infield and give them some type of defensive stability in that infield, because anytime you're playing Cabrera and Fielder at the corners, you need something up the middle.
And he's the best defensive shortstop in the American League. So that was a good move, a real good move. And they don't even need Peralta now because Iglesias hits a little bit too. So that was just a great trade all the way around, Chicago Cubs, right? Anyway, Chicago White Sox. Thank you very much, Eric.
Well, you know, you maybe just have the Cubs on your mind because they made plenty of moves during the trading season too. I mean, that move to send Garza to the Rangers and get Mike Olt back, that looks pretty good. A year ago, Olt was like a top 20, definitely a top 50 prospect. Cooled off a little bit to start the year this year, but maybe was having some type of vision issue with a dry tear duct or something like that. But that's cleared up a little bit, and he's kind of returning to the player a lot of people thought he would be later in this year. He's not a guy that's going to hit for a high average, but he's still got that power and he still plays pretty good defense. So for the Cubs, a team that's building to the future, that looks really good. And again, it gives the Rangers another great arm to throw in that rotation. They're going to have a pretty good 1-2-3 when they get to the postseason. You know, then the Cubs also dealt Feldman, and you know, they were just a team looking to make moves. They're making the kind of moves that you expect from a team that has Theo Epstein running the ball club.
Absolutely. You know who I thought they would end up dumping was Starlin Castro as well, because like Boston, they are deep in the shortstop position down on the farm. And I really thought Castro would get moved, but he didn't. I looked for him to get moved in the offseason, though. But that National League Central, that is some kind of division over there. St. Louis, who was just killing everybody, has now lost, at the time of this recording, 7 games in a row. Pittsburgh, who normally falls apart at this time of the year, has now won 4 in a row. And they lost Jason Grilly for an extended period of time with an arm injury. I don't know I predicted at the beginning of the season, Eric, that Pittsburgh would be falling away off the beaten path, and now look at them. Good grief. What do you make of Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like they never cooled off from their hot start. And you're right. They are the best team in the National League right now. They've won 4 in a row, played really good baseball against the Cardinals this week, so that helped them. And now they're sitting at 2.5 games up in that NL Central, and I think they have something like a 50% chance of winning that division this year. So they're not going to fall off like they did the last 2 years. This team is too good, even without Grilly in the bullpen. And they're winning 66% of their games at home right now. They're 36-18 this deep into the season, so they're just feeding off that home crowd. And they're even, you know, playing pretty decent baseball on the road. So this is a good baseball club. I don't know if they have the kind of pitching that's going to allow them to go deep into the postseason, but what a great feel-good story for the time being.
Yeah, first time in 20 seasons they might break 500. But I think their pitching is pretty good, actually. I think that's what's gotten them so far where they are today. You know, their run differential is only plus 64, which is third in the Central. St. Louis is way ahead. Cincinnati's up there. What do you make of Cincinnati, though? I honestly thought Cincinnati would run this division, and they might not even get a wild card. Well, they could. They'll probably get the wild card, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, if they're in any other division besides the NL Central, they're easily the second-place ball club, and I think they're definitely going to get a wild card spot. I mean, so they're not as bad as it seems to be 6 games out of first place. They're still playing .550 baseball. They struggled a little bit away from Great American Ballpark, and that's kind of, for them, they're a team that hits the ball pretty well, but they've run into a couple bumps and bruises with their pitching staff, and things are going to settle down here through the stretch, and I expect them to be a little bit better than they've been recently, maybe just fumbled a little bit in the last couple of weeks. But that's still a real good ball club in Cincinnati.
Absolutely is, yeah, and you're right. You know, if they were in the West, they'd be in first place.
Yeah, they'd be in first place, but they would still be in trouble. That Los Angeles Dodgers team is red hot right now. It seems like they finally put things together. I mean, this went from a ball club that was 10 games under 500 to a team that's, you know, now 8 games over 500 in just a little bit more than a month, about 6 weeks. So they've been playing red hot baseball since before the All-Star break. And there's just no way that I think that the Diamondbacks can hang with them. The Rockies have fallen off. The Padres and the Giants are non-contenders this year. And so that's going to be a team that could maybe just coast into the postseason.
Yeah, that is a crazy division. You know, a month ago, Stephen Goldman and I wrote the Dodgers off. We didn't think that there was a way in heck that they could get where they got, but they have. Arizona, though, a lot of people call them the sleepers. I don't know, man. I think you're right. I think the Dodgers might just run away with this thing. We'll see what goes on in the next few weeks, but Colorado, San Diego, San Francisco, that's going to be a battle for who finishes in last place.
Yeah, three bad teams that kind of pretended early in the season and now just not putting anything together. I think maybe the most interesting division right now is the AL Central, not necessarily because there's any issue with the Tigers and Indians up top, because the Royals are the hottest team in baseball right now. They just swept the Twins and have now won 9 games in a row. But unfortunately, over the last 10 games, they're 9-1, and they haven't gained any ground on the Tigers. They're also 9-1 in their last game, in last 10, and they've only gained a single game on the Cleveland Indians. So despite winning 9 in a row, they still sit 6.5 games back from the Tigers and almost have zero chance of making it into the postseason.
Absolutely, and that's crazy, isn't it? How do you go 9-1 and still and not gain a single game, not even a half a game?
Yeah, I mean, frustrating, but watching them lately, that's a team that's having a lot of fun right now. And so if they've got some of that clubhouse chemistry, maybe they can continue this run, maybe go on another streak here and continue to win games. But to pick up 6.5 games on those Tigers and that Tigers team, it seems like at 61-45, they're still underachieving. I mean, they're going to continue to score runs in bunches. They got a pretty decent pitching staff up there with all those strikeouts in their starting rotation. So it's going to be really tough to run them down at the top of the Central.
Well, I'll tell you what, Cleveland is hanging around. They've won 8 in a row at the time of this recording. They're 8-2 in their last 10. Those three teams, that's making it interesting, you know, and at least you got something to look at in the Central. But I think Detroit, I think they got so much better when they picked up Iglesias. I like that kid, and he's a great defensive player. I think that the Tigers, especially if you're Doug Fister or Rick Porcello, you are doing a happy dance right now. Because Johnny Peralta, for all he is, he's not exactly known for his glove or his range. And that's what they needed. Those guys are ground ball pitchers, as you know, and you need that for sure. But, you know, we talked about the West, we will be talking about the West to finish the show. The National League East, now the Mets stick a fork in them. I'm sorry, Met faithful, but I've been telling you all year, honestly, what they're all about. And they hate me over there, Eric, but I don't really care. You're not a real fan. What do you mean I'm not a real fan? I'm just an honest fan. Get your heads out of the sand because they've dropped 2.5 games in the last week. But Atlanta is blowing everybody away. They're on another tear. They've won 6 in a row again, 8 of the last 10. Washington, what the? Now, you know what I think about Washington. I think they suck. But I was alone in that opinion. What in the world happened to Washington?
Yeah, I can't even tell you what's wrong with that baseball team. I mean, they should be at least 500 right now. I mean, they're 4 games under, but at this point in the season, you are who your record says you are. They're 11 games behind the Braves. There's no way they can catch them. They didn't really do anything at the trade deadline to position themselves or make any upgrades for next year. And I don't really know what kind of moves they could make. It's just like they have some guys who aren't having bad years, but none of them are having breakout years. None of them are having great years. And so they're not really able to get over that hump. And they're not going to be in the postseason this year. And it's going to be a really, really interesting winter in Washington, D.C.
Well, I'll tell you what, they are kicking themselves in the pants right about now for shutting down Strasburg last year. You've got a chance to get to the dance. You go out there and dance with the person who brought you there. They blew it. Karma's a bitch, Davey Johnson. And Davey Johnson knows better than that. But they deserve what they get. You know, you can't expect to do things the same way every year. And they had a great chance last year because they were really hot. Bryce Harper he's a great player to watch, but he's not ready to lead that team yet. That pitching staff, Gio Gonzalez got murdered the other night, and that killed my fantasy week, I'm sure of it, because I was on a roll, man. I was winning like 7-8 weeks in a row in 3 or 4 of my leagues, and with Gio going like that, Washington's a mess. But Philadelphia, I had a guy that came on the show earlier in the year, did a preview with me, and he thought Philly would win the whole thing, and I started laughing at him. I said, you got to be kidding me. It's the Braves all the way. Crazy stuff there, though. But the American League East, you know, we talked about that at the beginning of the show. It's close up there. You got Boston and Tampa Bay neck and neck, really. And then you have Baltimore. But Tampa Bay just put Matt Moore on the DL. That's not going to be a good thing for Tampa Bay, is it?
No, not great for Tampa Bay. I mean, they don't have a really deep rotation, but that's still a good ball club. And if he's able to come back after just the 15 days, I mean, you're really only going to miss 3 starts. And they can recover from that. I think even if they don't end up winning the East, they still have an opportunity to win the wild card. And I think I would definitely take them in a 1-game coin flip against a team like the Orioles, if that's who ends up getting the other wild card spot, or even the Rangers. So it could be definitely something to watch for down the stretch, but I think the Rays are okay. I think they'll eventually overtake the Red Sox despite what the Red Sox did at the deadline.
Yeah, I predicted that Tampa Bay would finish fifth in that division, but then I also said they could finish first because that was a crazy division to predict. I still like Baltimore, man. I think Baltimore is going to win this division. I think they're going to get hot again. You know, some of their big bats have cooled off a bit post All-Star break, but you can't keep those guys like Davis and those fellas down for long, Adam Jones down for long. And I think Manny Machado, he's cooled off a bit too, but again, he's a good hitter. And if he starts turning it on again, I think Baltimore might be all right.
Yeah, they definitely have some offensive weapons. They need their pitching staff to hang in there a little bit longer. And I think right now some of their struggles are just some of their arms are wearing down a little bit. And it's a tough time for that, especially as you said, their bats have cooled off a little bit. So they should come back, and it should be a really interesting three-team fight down the stretch.
Absolutely. And I'm sorry, Toronto fans, but I tried to tell you, you don't sign 39-year-old knuckleballers and trade away your best catching prospect for them. And you don't trade with a team that can't win with their stars in a very weak division, bring them to a new division, and expect them to be resurrected superstars again. It don't work. Bad luck for Toronto, man. Bad luck. Anyway, Eric, great stuff tonight. Thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Hey, Phil. Thanks for having me on.
All right. That was Eric Pleiss, and you can find him at knuckleballsblog.com. Coming up next, Alex Hall and I will be checking out the American League West and, of course, talking about the Oakland A's. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show, and we'll be right back.
Cosmic Music, 24/7 on CosmicRadio.com. CosmicRadio.com.
Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com.
TalkSuperstation.com.
That's right, the superstation of talk.
Talking to you each and every day.
We have a lot to talk about.
Monday.
Government is not the answer. L is the answer.
Hey guys, I'm here.
Tuesday.
The Yankees are always good.
We are going to go for old-timers now.
Well, I think I feel. I'm a Mets fan. We have clothespin.
Wednesday.
You and I are staying put.
Thank goodness, because I have no socks on, and staying put is what I need to do.
Thursday.
I would love Martin to get Sheen actually decided to run for president. I would vote for him.
Friday.
You know how hard it is to get a topic not about sports on ESPN Radio? It's about as hard as me introducing sports on this show.
Saturday.
It's time to party.
And Sunday.
How can we respect anyone in Washington, D.C.?
Every day, we talk to you.
Sit back and enjoy this.
Talk Superstation.
I'm on the air.
.com. Talk. Spoken here.
Are you tired of boring sports websites that's about the same old company line? If you are, then I'd invite you to stop over to thesportsgoons.com. Their edgy commentary and a weekly podcast highlighting today's issues is second to none. That's thesportsgoons.com. The new media has arrived.
Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show.
This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere
deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnasons.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
Welcome back to the Phil Nasons Show. What a great program so far, and it's only about to get better. Alex Hall's here from AthleticsNation.com. Alex, welcome to the show, dude. How are you?
Ding dong, the LA Angels are dead.
I was waiting for you to say that. Okay, why are they dead? Well, we knew why. We know why they're dead. But
the Angels were already on thin ice. Then they lost 3 out of 4 to Oakland last week, and then got swept by the Rangers, the two teams they're trying to catch. They're now 14 games out of first place, 10 games out of second place. They're ninth in the wild card standings. So to get a wild card, they'd have to pass 8 teams in 2 months. And on top of all that, they got the message that they're a little bit out of it. They just traded a player out of their starting lineup. At this point, it's only August, but it's getting easier and easier to say that the Angels are out of this race this year and looking towards next year.
Yeah, that's a bummer about Pujols, though, because my fantasy team took a hit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a bummer, and you never want to see anyone get hurt. But you look and you say, this is what happens when you sign a bunch of guys in their 30s to long contracts. Okay, so this is the second year of his deal, but it's what, like an 8 or 9 year deal? He was going to get hurt at some point in his contract. And that's what happens with these super long-term deals, especially when you're giving them to a guy who's already 30. So it sucks, but it's hard to feel sorry for the Angels because they had to know this was going to happen at some point, maybe sooner than later.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I just was amazed that the Angels would do what they did last year, and then to top it off, they signed Josh Hamilton, who hasn't exactly lit the world on fire. Ugly situation in L.A. But I guess if you're an Oakland Athletics fan, that's all good in the hood, right?
That's right, because the A's don't pay for past performance. They search for future performance, and it's working out so far. They had another solid week on the field, won 4 out of 7 of their games, and it was made even better off the field by the acquisition of an infielder, Alberto Callaspo, from the Angels. Rare to see that trade within the division, but that's what happened. Callaspo comes from the Angels. Grant Green goes to the Angels from the A's. We talked about him last week. He's an infield prospect. His bat is promising, but he doesn't have a glove. He has no position to play. He's supposed to be an infielder, but he's terrible at it. He just did not factor into Oakland's plans this year. They're trying to win right now this year. It was even unclear where he would fit into their future, if at all. So, you know, considering how bad he looked in his major league trial this month and his other various shortcomings, you got to trade something to get something. And I'm okay trading Grant Green for a major league infielder. You always hope the prospects work out. Now I hope he doesn't because he's on the Angels. But we got a major leaguer in exchange for him, and I'm happy about that. And taking a look at Callaspo here, he was the Angels' starting third baseman this year, but of course the A's already have Josh Donaldson there. Callaspo was the third baseman this year and for 2.5 years before that, but looks like he's going to be playing more second base. He's a switch hitter. He's about a league average bat overall for his career, but he is having a bit of a down year this year. OPS is only .667 entering his stint in Oakland. So you could call him a buy low candidate. You could say he's declining in his age. We'll find out. But he's about a league average hitter. Doesn't hit for a lot of power. Decent on base skills. But the key for him is that he almost never strikes out. 6.8% of his plate appearances. That doesn't sound very meaningful to you. But that's the third lowest strikeout percentage in the entire majors. So in his down year, he's striking out fewer than everybody except two other guys. He also swings and misses less than 3% of the time. That's also third in the majors. So what you've got is a guy who does nothing but make contact. He's hitting into a lot of outs this year, but if you absolutely never strike out, something's going to fall in for hits eventually, because every time you hit the ball in play, something can happen, right? So Kiyospo, you know, decent hitter, but he always puts the ball into play. He was an excellent defender at third base, but like I said, he'll be playing second base in Oakland, and I really don't know what to expect. I've never seen him play there. He did put in a very poor season at second base in Kansas City a few years ago, so I guess we'll go with that and not be too optimistic about his defense. But I'm a lot happier to have another solid hitter in the infield. He's going to be replacing Adam Rosales on the roster, so he'll be the platoon partner with Eric Sogard. Sogard, the left-handed hitter, will hit against the right-handed pitchers, and Kiyospo, the switch hitter, will hit against lefties, just like it was working with Rosales before, except you'll have Lowry playing shortstop full-time, Sogard and Kiyospo as the straight platoon at second base. And while this represents a small drop-off in defense, like I said, you've now got a league-average hitter every day at second base. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but that was really the last remaining hole on the team where you weren't real happy with what you were getting out of that position. Now you've got a league average bat and solid defense, and that's the worst spot in your lineup. I'm pretty happy about that. So welcome to Alberto Kiyospo, and we will see what he does in Oakland.
That should be pretty good. I'll tell you what, though. This weekend's going to matter. Three games with Texas at home, huh?
That's right. And looking at how that might go, I can't help but take a look at who is hot in Oakland's lineup right now. I took a look through the July stats, and I found two players who are sort of performing above everybody else, and they're not who you would expect. It's Eric Sogard, the second baseman, and Derek Norris, the catcher. Both of these guys are part of Bob Melvin's fabled platoons, where he takes some guys that can only hit against, you know, either right-handed or left-handed pitching, and he platoons them with a complementary player, much like he did with Johnny Gomes and Seth Smith last year, and he turns it into a league average bat. So Sogard can't hit lefties very well, but he can hit righties pretty well, and Kiyospo was the opposite. Norris can hit left-handed pitching pretty well, but he struggles sometimes against the righties. They got John Jaso to go with him. So you got Sogard and Norris, who've been very hot, partly because of the way that Bob Melvin manages them. You've got Sogard with an 835 OPS in July. He didn't walk much, but he led the team in extra base hits. This guy hits ninth in the lineup. He led the team in extra base hits in July. As he did so well that he's now a league average hitter for the whole season. He's brought his stats up to the point where he's not a liability at the plate anymore. And again, you combine that with Kiyospo, you've now got a league average second baseman. And the same thing with Norris. He only had 37 plate appearances in July, but he led the team in home runs. He hit four homers. He walked more than he struck out, put up an OPS over 1,200. And according to Fangraphs, he was worth an entire win just on his own, almost an entire win, just for the month of July. He was huge in July, and he had a big home run against the Angels, too. So again, you've got catcher, where you've got Jaso, who's a very good hitter, and now Norris is holding his own against the lefties. You've got a solid hitter behind the plate every day. And catcher and second base, those are the two weak spots on the roster, and now you've got average production in your worst positions. Remember, Sogard was a guy who wasn't even supposed to make the team. He was supposed to be in AAA, and he just squeaked on with a big spring. Well, according to Fangraphs again, Fangraphs and Baseball Reference have their wins above replacement statistic, but they calculate it differently, so they come out with different figures. Fangraphs thinks that Sogard has been solid this year. Baseball Reference thinks that Sogard has been the second most valuable player on the A's, worth nearly 2.5 wins just on his own, playing half-time. That is enormous. This guy was not supposed to make the team, and according to one of the best baseball websites there is, he's the second most valuable player on the team. That's mind-boggling. I don't even know how that happened. Huge.
Well, it happened because Scott Sizemore got hurt.
Well, I know how he made it. I don't know how he played his way into 2.5 wins above replacement in half a season in halftime playing.
Be careful, Alex, because the next thing you know, people are going to start accusing him of taking the magic beans.
Now, Sogard does it all with math and glasses and those kinds of things. I don't know.
Gosh.
He's the guy who gets all the fans in the stands hold up you know, big cardboard glasses, and he's got the sign in the outfield says Nerd Power. So I would be very disappointed if I found out he wasn't very smart, because that nerdy accountant glasses thing is sort of his persona. Wouldn't it just blow your mind if he actually wasn't a smart guy? I have no idea.
Anyway, though, the West is certainly entertaining, but Oakland has a commanding, they're 3.5 games above Texas. Like I said, this is going to be a big, big series this weekend, isn't it?
Big series. It sure is. And it's tough to know what to make of Texas for the rest of the year. They were saying at the trading deadline that anyone was available off their team for the right price. You don't hear that from teams making the push for the playoffs like that. They have had a bit of personnel change lately. They made a very large deadline deal to get Matt Garza, the starting pitcher from the Cubs. They gave up some pretty good prospects to get him too, but Garza's come in. He's already had two fantastic starts, and he was on fire with the Cubs before he got traded. So he's been lights out this season, and he dominated the A's when he faced them in interleague play. So Garza's already come in and made a difference, won a couple of games. That's a good thing for the Rangers. On the other side, you have the impending Biogenesis suspensions. You know, last week we were talking about that. I didn't think anyone was going to get caught or was going to get actually suspended this year. You thought they were, and it looks like you're going to be right on that, because all the news says it could happen, you know, on Friday. It could happen today. Or if not, then this weekend or maybe Monday. And one of the big names on that list is Nelson Cruz. And he is right now the second best hitter on the Rangers. And he's a guy that's been on these World Series teams. He's the guy that kills the A's when they play. Man, it seems like Cruz always hits the big home run against the A's. If the Rangers lose him for the rest of the year, I mean, it doesn't kill them, but it sure hampers their lineup quite a bit. And with the trading deadline gone, they don't have a lot to replace him with. It'll be in-house options like Craig Gentry. No offense, he's a good player, but he's not Nelson Cruz. And what's going to happen with that, you know? They're going to lose a big piece of their lineup. So you've got a good new starting pitcher, but you know, the lineup, they needed a little help, and losing Cruz is going the opposite direction for them.
Well, they lost Hamilton last year, and they still seem to be doing okay. So, and that was, he was the biggest part. But here's the thing, the problem with this Magic Bean scandal is that you don't know what Cruz is going to do. Is he going to take the deal? Because that's what it looks like. It looks like to me, Alex, that they are all cutting deals. They know what's happening. If you looked at the Detroit trade, they traded for Iglesias. They traded Avisail Garcia to the Cubs, and they got this Iglesias kid from Boston to replace Johnny Peralta because they know it's coming down. This is going to be ugly, but still in all, Texas is coming into town on a four-game win streak. It should be really cool, but Oakland seems to have that driver's seat, and that's a good thing. Now, Bartolo Colon, if he gets anything at all, it'll be so minimal it won't even be funny. You know, it depends on who you ask. Some say that he won't get any game suspension, and others say that he will get one, but it'll be small, or he'll get slapped on the wrist. Now, technically, Alex, by the collective bargaining agreement, a second offense is 100 games. Now, I don't know what they charge Bartolo Colon with, but it seems to me that if they're going back on that test that he took and was positive and owned his business, I think they're full of malarkey. But what in the world? The whole thing with this West is I thought that the Angels would be a bit more competitive, and they are just slip-sliding away. Boy, yep. Oh, boy.
They've just blown it. And then you got the Mariners and the Astros down there too, who went opposite directions here. The Mariners had a lot of veterans they could have traded, and they didn't. And no one's really sure why. And the Astros, on the other hand, did very well for themselves. They got rid of a few players that weren't part of their future, and they got back some interesting prospects for them. So the Astros did it right. Mariners are just kind of eating paste in the corner. I'm not really sure what they're doing, but they kept everybody. Interesting choice. As for those suspensions you were saying, everything I've read says Colon should be safe. We'll see what actually happens. And again, as for Cruz, you know, if I'm him, I'd take it now. You know, you get to come back for the playoffs probably. And hey, Melky Cabrera missed the end of the season, and he still got a 2-year contract. Colon missed the rest of the season. He still got re-signed this year. You know, take it now, not at the beginning of your next contract. But exactly. Again, you know, I look at all this, and I don't care about any of it, because all that matters is the A's playing their game. And they have such a good deep roster, and we've just illustrated how even the worst spots in their roster are now league average. And then you have all the exciting players on top of that in the middle of the order. It's theirs to lose. They don't need anything to go right or wrong with anybody else. They just need to keep playing like they're playing. Looking down month by month, their win totals: April, 16 wins, May, 16 wins, June, 16 wins, July, 15 wins, but there was the All-Star break in there, so they would have had 16. They have been very consistent all year because of the way the roster is made. You can't have a very long dry spell when there's so many good players. A couple of them will get hot at any time. The A's just need to keep doing what they're doing, avoid big injuries, because they're in the driver's seat, like you said, and the only thing that can stop them is themselves falling off a cliff. So, you know, just keep doing what they're doing, and no one's going to pass them if they can continue playing as consistently well as they've been playing.
Makes sense to me. We got about 30 seconds. Were you disappointed that the Oakland A's didn't get Jake Peavy?
Absolutely not. I did not want Jake Peavy. Good pitcher. He would have cost, I feel, too much for the A's to get him. I think they were targeting him until they were sure that Cologne was going to be safe. That's the other reason I think Cologne's okay, because the A's would have went and got Peavy if he wasn't. They would have done more than Jose Iglesias for Peavy if they wanted him. He's a good pitcher and all that, who would have helped the team, but I'm okay with what we got, and I didn't need to trade Sonny Gray, Michael Choice, Addison Russell to get a guy like Peavy. I'm happy rolling with the rotation they've got.
Makes sense. Great stuff tonight, Alex. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks a lot, Phil.
And you can find Alex Hall over at athleticsnation.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank Brandon Davis, Eric Pleiss, and Alex Hall for being here, making this show a fantastic, fantastic way to kick off your weekend. On Monday, Stephen Goldman will be here. And, of course, we'll be talking about Magic Bean scandal. And maybe there'll be some suspensions coming up. Until then, you all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.